Hi everyone, this is Janice, your neighborhood nutritionist. I've spent the last couple of years helping busy office professionals upgrade their health through upgrading their nutrition. And one thing was very obvious. Nobody's got time to read up on all the scientific stuff to know fact from fiction. So each week, I will talk to you about a different topic or concept in nutrition in simple, everyday terms, so you are empowered to make the best nutritional decisions. Get ready to learn about some new stuff, gain new insights into old concepts, and super boost your health. Okay, so this week I have Helen, a transformation coach, here to talk to us a little bit about alcohol. Welcome, Helen, and thank you so much for coming to my podcast.
Hi, Janice. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, and alcohol is such an important part of life in this country, I would say. But before we go into that, maybe can you introduce yourself a little bit to us?
Sure. Yeah, as you've said already, my name's Helen and I'm a transformation coach. So I help overwhelmed women who drink too much to take back control without feeling deprived.
Apart from drinking, within the diet world, the nutrition world, and even the health, I think that's such an important concept, is that we are not trying to remove things, restrict things, deprive ourselves, because we all want to be happy. We all want to enjoy life. So I'm really interested actually to hear more about your experiences and your views on alcohol, because as we are recording this, we are in the run-up to Christmas.
Yes.
And at the time that this will go out, it's probably where people are starting to stop their dry January efforts. And it's always a difficult period when we all love to celebrate, right? And
absolutely,
understandably, not everybody drinks alcohol, but many people do.
But they do. Many do, especially over a big time in the year. It's what we do to celebrate, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think when we were talking before, you had some interesting statistics around alcohol in the UK. Maybe we should start with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just as a point of interest, you know, when you start to dig a little bit deeper into alcohol and the effects of alcohol, some of the lessons that I've learned along the way, 35% of A&E attendants in our A&E wards in hospitals, 35% of that is alcohol related. And then you've got, if you look at violent acts, crime, you know, within the home, crime on the street, 39%. That's 39% of those criminal acts, you know.
Too close to 50.
It's certainly getting there, isn't it? You know, the victims of those of crimes report that alcohol was a part of that situation.
Mm.
And then suicide, mental health is such a big issue for people, especially at the moment, but it's always been there, and 30% of suicides are down to alcohol. So when you sit back and reflect on that, they are preventable.
Yeah.
From a point of view of alcohol being the reason, they are preventable.
Yeah, and not to mention, I guess, on the more micro level, all sorts of problems that the overconsumption of alcohol can bring to our physical health.
So many problems, you know, and problems that, in all honesty, I didn't realise when I was drinking that the alcohol was causing those problems.
Yeah, and I think this segues nicely then into my question about why did you actually end up becoming, you know, a bit of an expert and focusing on this topic?
So for me, I had a reasonably normal childhood. Around about 14, 15, I started to experiment with alcohol, which was so normal for where I grew up and the people I was spending time with. And I continued that relationship with alcohol right the way through into my early 30s. Had a great 20s, parties, you know, had stressful jobs, used alcohol to relieve the pressure, relieve the stress of those jobs, having a glass or two of wine a night. And as I say, that continued into my early 30s. And then I had children, which I didn't drink when I was pregnant and didn't drink whilst I was breastfeeding. But as soon as that period of my life came to an end, it did not once occur to me to stop drinking. My immediate reaction at that point was to open a bottle of wine and get back to normal. Normality resumed. Yeah. It never once occurred to me to continue with the non-drinking.
And so drinking became your normal.
Became my normal effectively, even though I wasn't aware of this at the time. It's only now I reflect back that I can see that that's what happened, but at the time it was just what I was doing. It was my normal. And that relationship then continued for another 10 years, and during that time it got to a point where I would deprive myself all week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then at the weekends binge drink. You know, that was my time. That was my treat. It was my reward for a hard week at work. It was just what everybody else was doing. So I would consider that I was a binge drinker at weekends. And as I say, that continued for about 10 years. And then I became very aware that I was experiencing memory loss on a regular basis. And I would wake up the next morning and not remember a lot about what had happened the night before. And having children, that had a huge impact on me. And that's when I started to realise that something needed to change.
I was going to say, that must be a really scary and unsettling realisation when you wake up in the morning and you have no idea. I mean, personally, I've never had that experience, but just imagining it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes if I'm just being forgetful and I forgot where I put something, you do feel that panic, don't you? And you're like, oh, where do I put my phone?
Yes. And do you know what? That's so interesting, because that was a big one for me, waking up. Because obviously what happens when you drink, you do fall asleep very easily. You slip into basically an alcohol coma. And then as the alcohol starts to wear off, you then are wide awake sort of 3 to 4 hours later, depending on the person. And at that point, it's probably 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and you ping wide awake. And that realization that you've still got your makeup on, you've still got your jewelry on. How did I get to bed? I don't remember getting to bed. Where's my bag? Where's my purse? Did the children get to bed okay? And it just started to happen on a regular basis. And the alarm bells then for me were ringing.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel slightly stressed listening to that. And I guess let's unpack that a little bit and talk about what is actually happening to our bodies when we drink alcohol. Because, of course, the most commonly known things is that when you get drunk, you relax. You know, maybe you find things a little bit funnier. And I know for some people, they do describe certain drinks as downers. So it does affect your mood, obviously. But what is actually happening when we drink alcoholic drinks? And what are other effects that some people might get?
Well, it varies, obviously, depending on the person. But one thing alcohol does do is slow everything down. So it slows your thought processes down, which is why you can get that feeling of feeling quite relaxed, because it will create that feeling. And obviously then, of course, in turn, because it's slowing everything down and your brain's starting to work so much slower, you don't think rationally, you don't make sensible choices. And, you know, we've all, I'm sure, experienced times when we have had short-term memory loss. So maybe you can remember going to bed, but you might not remember a conversation that you've had with somebody, or you might not remember that you went to a certain place. You know, if you've gone to different pubs and somebody will say, oh, can you remember we were in such and such? And you will be like, oh, no, I don't remember that part of the evening. You know, it creates brain fog, short-term memory loss, you know, and it does suppress our moods. It massively affects our serotonin levels, and our serotonin is responsible for our moods, and it's responsible for moderating and looking after our happiness. So interestingly enough, in turn, when we are drinking, we are responsible for creating a negative mood and making ourselves unhappy.
Yeah, and on a more physical level, alcohol, number one, dehydrates us,
yes,
and also have a lot of sugar.
Yes.
Am I right?
A lot of sugar, a lot of sugar, a lot of excess calories. You know, it's surprising how many people, me included, incidentally, I hold my hands up and say that I, if ever I went through a period of my life where I was on a diet or on a health plan, perhaps choosing to be a little bit more conscious of what I was eating, I didn't take into consideration alcohol in that thought process. And actually, alcohol is full of calories, as you've said, and it's full of excess sugar. It's not good for our bodies in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, because I'm sure, you know, people who are listening understand the basic concept of having excess sugar in the system. And my understanding is, actually, I need to correct myself, a lot of beers don't show up as having sugar content, but they do have a lot of carbs and calories.
Exactly.
Because of the fermentation process, right?
Yeah, it's all about the processes that something goes through, and you're absolutely right with your knowledge. Yes. And you know, it's quite normal for people to be very conscious about what they eat and very aware of what they put in their bodies and very motivated to exercise and do movement and lead a very healthy lifestyle. But on the flip side of that, they drink and potentially sometimes often drink too much on a regular basis.
So good that you brought that up, because I was just going to ask you, give us a little bit of a revision. What is the standard recommended, how do you call it, like alcohol consumption guideline for men and women?
The guidelines are the maximum recommended weekly intake of alcohol units is between 14 and 21 units.
For both men and women?
It's more for men than it is for women. So it's between the 14 and 21 units.
Right.
So for example, to put it a little bit more simply, averagely, a glass of wine, a beer, a gin and tonic, they all are approximately 2 units.
So it does add up very quickly, especially when people would go to the pub after work and easily have 4 or 5 pints.
Sure, easily. I mean, for me, I can speak from personal experience. I would never have described myself as a heavy drinker at the time, but I could very easily drink a bottle of wine on a Friday night, a bottle of wine on a Saturday night, and a bottle of wine on a Sunday night. And when I say easily, that could as well be mixed in with a couple of gins, maybe a couple of Proseccos, depending on who I was with. Sometimes people would get the shots out. You know what it's like when you're on a night out and it gets to later in the evening and it's a good idea to have shots, and they get, and you partake. And, you know, so that would be extra to that 3 bottles of wine. You know, and looking at the statistics, that would be at least double my recommended weekly intake.
Yeah.
And that would be me considering myself a moderate drinker.
And I think a lot of people like have, you know, pairing their food with wine and all of that. But then there's the other type of drinking where I've seen on several occasions with people around me is that they just don't eat. And sometimes I describe this as us basically lying to ourselves, right? It's kind of like people who regularly skip a meal but then feel tired, so they reach for the coffee, reach for the energy drink.
Sure.
So you're basically consuming calories, so your body is temporarily fooled into thinking that, right, I've got energy, but it has no nutritious content at all.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, the amount of sugar, we spoke about this earlier, when, you know, when you have that sugar, your body spikes, you know, it really does. Your insulin levels rise and your body spikes. And of course, what happens when your body spikes, it then drops and it falls dramatically. And that kind of difference in the way your body's balanced isn't good for you. You know, having a balanced blood sugar is really important when it comes to, say, for example, diabetes. And food in itself, you know, if you are going to drink, you know, to try and prevent the nasty effects of a hangover, which is really quite horrendous. I think we've all possibly experienced that at some point in our lives, at some degree. And, you know, one of the things that we can do to reduce the effects of alcohol is eat.
Yes, and drink water, right?
Drink water, lots of sleep and food, you know, and they are at least ways. If you are going to drink, you know, try and keep it to a moderate level, and sleep, water and food are vital to keep the body as balanced as possible.
Yeah, and I've heard stories of how some people would drink so much that by the time they wake up in the morning, they're still drunk. So it sounds like alcohol stays in our system.
It does. For 10 days it is. Before alcohol will completely leave your system, 10 whole days. So it just emphasizes the damage that happens when it's, you know, the toxins that go into your body. Our body has to fight so hard to get rid of them. It takes 10 days for them to completely leave the system.
How do our bodies actually deal with the alcohol? So obviously, with things like water or non-alcoholic drinks, you know, we know that we drink the water, there's some absorption going on, and then, but mainly, you know, when you reach your intestines is where you reabsorb a lot of water. But with alcohol, presumably we must, you know, I've heard of, you know, having an enzyme which particularly deals with alcohol.
With alcohol, because it's a poison, because it's a toxin, and obviously we're consuming that and we're putting that into our bodies, it literally is a case of once it's in, the body has to go through the process of getting rid of those toxins, which is why it's so important to eat, drink lots of water and sleep, because all of those things in turn will aid that process. It helps the body to go through those motions. But regardless of what you do, it will take 10 days for that alcohol to leave your system completely. So it just puts into perspective how much effort the body has to go through to get rid of the toxins that we've put in there in the first place.
It's funny, isn't it, that we're voluntarily feeding ourselves 100% poison.
Poison. And, you know, it's something that I didn't ever consider when I was drinking. You know, these are things that I've learned through the course of my journey. And ultimately, you're absolutely right. It's ethanol. You know, it's the same thing that they put in our petrol, that we put in our cars. You know, it is the same chemical that's put through different processes, but ultimately that is what we are drinking. It is absolutely, you're 100% right, it's poison. And that's what it does to our bodies. It poisons our bodies.
And are there general standards, I guess, in terms of what defines binge drinking behavior? Is there a threshold, like frequency, amount?
I think binge drinking is usually when a person is drinking large amounts in a short space of time. So, for example, if you were to drink one glass of wine every day, 7 days a week, that wouldn't be classed as binge drinking. But if you were to take those 7 glasses of wine and drink them on a Saturday night, that would be classed as binge drinking, because you are putting a large amount of alcohol into your body over a really short period of time.
Laura, I've got a question for you, because you'll be good at this. I'm thinking of giving something small to a couple of my friends, but I've run out of ideas of what to give them.
Excuse me, what about my range of candles? The London one would be perfect for your evenings in. It's also made of coconut wax and essential oils, which makes them both vegan and pet friendly.
Oh my god, I cannot believe I've actually forgotten that you've got a whole range of candles.
All my candles, they're inspired by my travels.
For people who don't care for candles, Laura also has loads of other homeware products that are super chic and will be perfect for gifting for any occasion.
Also, if you run out of ideas, I've put some curated gift sets together online, so you can really customize them with the color combinations and different products, and they're all neatly wrapped in gorgeous packaging.
And remind me, where can people find your amazing collection?
So my website is laurajacksondesign.com, or you can also find me on Instagram, laura_jackson_designs.
So everyone check out Laura's stuff now and use promo code NUTRITION to get 15% off any orders. That's promo code NUTRITION. I'm wondering if you know why some people go red when they drink. Or I've heard of people having almost allergic reactions, like breaking out in hives or...
Yeah, there's a couple of things about that I can probably share with you. It's very, very rare that people are actually allergic to alcohol. It's not a very common allergy.
Mm.
But people can be allergic to other components that are in the alcohol. So it might be something else that's, you know, part of the process that they might be allergic to. And very often it's normally an intolerance as opposed to an allergy. Mm. So the body is intolerant to something that's either the alcohol or something that's in the alcohol. And as far as the red face goes, it's often down to a faulty gene. It's genetic. So again, it's very rare. But there's a gene that we have in our bodies that's responsible for breaking down a substance that's actually in the alcohol. So if you've got that gene that's faulty, then that can cause you to get a red face when you drink alcohol. Moderate.
So I think very naturally when we talk about alcohol and whether it's, well, in most cases, overconsumption of alcohol leading to hangovers.
Yep.
So what are hangovers? What are our bodies telling us and why do we get them?
Basically, quite simply, a hangover is it's the symptoms that your body will show from drinking too much alcohol. And the list is it's pretty endless, to be honest. Ranges from headaches, dizziness, sweating, there's nausea, feel very drowsy, very tired, brain fog, you know, you can't think clearly, everything seems very fuzzy. And of course, you know, it also has an effect on stress and anxiety. It has a huge effect, especially the day after when your body's in withdrawal and it's trying to get rid of all those toxins.
You get the booze blues, don't you?
100%, you really do, don't you? The booze blues. And it's, you know, it really isn't pleasant. It's really quite nasty. But as we touched on earlier, you know, you are ultimately poisoning your body and putting toxins into your body. So the body has to fight incredibly hard to get rid of those toxins. And those symptoms are what happens as the body is going through that process.
And when it comes to hangover cures, what are some that you would have heard of and what do you think about them?
To be honest, you know, just touching very quickly on the prevention, in all honesty, there's two ways to prevent hangovers, and that is drinking in moderation or abstaining completely. Truly, it's really is that simple. And obviously, you know, we mentioned earlier, sleep, water and food. And if all of those things are happening before you drink, that will help. It certainly will help.
Is it true that certain foods or certain drinks higher in fat content is meant to, I don't know, people say it lines your stomach?
No, I mean, you know, ultimately, if you drink alcohol, you are going to feel the effects of it. It's quite simple, you know, no matter what you can put inside your body before you drink alcohol, we'll go back to the point again, it is a toxin, it is a poison, and you will feel the effects from it.
Okay, so we've covered prevention. Now, to cure a hangover, we've all heard it from people. Have a fry up, have something greasy. How much truth is in that? And What's your recommendation to get over a hangover
quickly? I think you're absolutely right. There's no doubt that people do say that a fry-up will cure a hangover. And the main reason, if you actually look into the science behind that, is that eggs, they have something in them called cysteine. And what cysteine does is it will break down toxins in the liver. So obviously people reach for that quick fix, go to, it feels comforting when they eat it, you know, the bacon, the eggs and everything. And because it's got the eggs within that meal, that those eggs will help break down the toxins in the liver. But do remember that cysteine, it's basically, you could eat foods that are high in protein. That will have the same effect. So chicken, yogurt, sunflower seeds, all of those things will obviously have the same effect and ultimately be much, much kinder to your body than a big fat fry up.
So with some other drinking myths, I've seen the back and forth going on for years now. Is a glass of wine a day good for you?
Do you know what? It's pretty similar response really to the fry up question because research shows that a glass of wine is good for you because wine is full of antioxidants. And these have been shown that they may prevent and protect you against the big diseases, heart disease, cancer, you know, that kind of disease. But again, antioxidants are found in fruits, they're found in vegetables, they're found in nuts, they're found in whole grains, found in fish, found in green tea. So, you know, if you want to put antioxidants into your body, there are much better ways to ingest them than a glass of wine every day.
And is it true that spirits are less fattening than beers and wines?
Actually, if you look at calories, which I think is something that most people have got more of an awareness of, if you look at a glass of wine, 100 grams of wine is 83 calories, around about 83, 85 calories. And for the same amount of spirits, you're looking around about 200.
Okay.
There was quite a big difference. Okay. And also you've got to remember as well, it's what you mix it with and the amount of sugar that's in there.
And I think this segues nicely to my next question. Obviously, it's very simple, right? Don't drink seems to be the easiest principle to stick to. However, we all know that working in the city, or even if everybody in your family or in your environment are drinkers, it's sometimes quite difficult to be that one person who doesn't drink.
Yeah.
So how would you advise people actually to either improve on their drinking behavior or stop completely? And like, you know, like you mentioned at the beginning, not let drinking become a normal. And how can they deal with that? It might not be even direct peer pressure, but simply the fact that you're in a group of 10 people, the other 9 all drink. So what would your advice be?
So the first one, the first point that I would make is just to create an awareness that there's a habit there in the first place. Identify that there is a habit there, because I wasn't aware that I had one. So it's creating that awareness first, making sure that you're aware that that it is a problem. And then once you've identified that and you realise that you would like to take back control, it's about starting to look at the triggers, things that trigger you. There will be certain things that, you know, you associate with alcohol, and they are your triggers. And it's then starting to look at creating distractions and coping mechanisms, you know, ways to deal with those triggers, because they are there. You know, the word trigger, it does trigger you into feeling that you deserve a drink. It's a reward, it's a treat. And that's how we have been programmed over the years to have that association with alcohol. So it's learning coping mechanisms and distractions to deal with those triggers.
I think that those are really important steps for people to take, you know, perhaps at their own pace.
Absolutely.
Unless you're having you know, acute health symptoms, then go to your doctor and figure out a plan.
Yes, indeed.
But in terms of the more shorter term, you know, I know that, like I said, when this goes out, it's probably coming to the end of January. People will come out of the dry January jail, and drinking might resume in a lot of people's lives. So can I ask you to give our listeners three actionable tips, actually, on the next time they are at an event or a situation where they're faced with drinking?
Okay. For me, the most important thing when I'm out in a social situation is to be mentally prepared before I go. So be aware of where you're going to, who you're going with, so that you're fully equipped mentally to be able to cope. I have often felt more comfortable going to somewhere that I know serves non-alcoholic drinks, whether that be a 0% beer or coffee. I really enjoy a really nice coffee, so going somewhere that I know I can get a really nice coffee has always given me that reassurance that I will enjoy myself without the alcohol, because I associated alcohol with joy, with having fun. What I realise now is the fun part is going out with my friends and family and seeing them and spending time with them.
And nowadays, right, in most establishments, you can easily call them, look them up online just to see what they've got.
Yeah, I have done that before as well, because that does give you that confidence, because you're absolutely right. Peer pressure is one of the biggest challenges that you will face. You know, alcohol is the only drug known to man that we get pressure from people when we don't take it.
Yeah, and I think what we need to remember, unlike other macronutrients, unlike other foods, our bodies are not naturally craving for alcohol, right? It's something that we don't need to survive.
Yeah.
So people need to think about, why is it that you want to have that drink? Are you nervous at an event? Are you angry at something and you just needed an outlet? Are you sad? And quite often, there's probably a different way to deal with that emotion.
I totally agree with you. The thing that we've been programmed, though, is to believe that alcohol is the answer. Alcohol relaxes us. Alcohol gives us confidence. You know, the amount of people that I speak to that genuinely believe that they can't go out without a drink before they go out because they need the drink to have the confidence to be in a group of people. And actually, alcohol does completely the opposite to that. It takes our confidence away. It gives us anxiety. And it's a really interesting thing to understand.
So, Helen, this has been such an interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Coming from someone who's never been a big drinker, listening to your story of how you were once a big drinker, and then basically going through a healing journey yourself, and now you're helping others.
Yes.
Achieve the same.
Yes.
So this has been amazing. And one last question I have for you is, what is the one food that takes you to your happy place every time?
Well, for me, because my happy place is in Thailand, so my happy food, my favorite food, is a red Thai chicken curry. And it's purely because the flavors, the taste, the smell, everything about it just takes me to my happy place and makes me smile.
And that's it for this episode of Neighborhood Nutritionist. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I hope you've really enjoyed it and learned something you can take away with you today. If you could take a second to share this episode with one person you think will love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. See you soon!